Accession number 28498, reel number 5.
Very right, reel 5. Did any incidents occur while you were doing these various operations during the North African landings that spring to mind?
Well, as I've mentioned, it was very brief, the North Africa part, because they capitulated. And then that followed up with the invasion of Sicily, which, again, wasn't a big deal. We did... you see, basically, it was Italian opposition. And Italians are not really noted for their fighting attitudes. In fact, we trailed, the whole fleet trailed its colour up and down the coast of Africa, trying to draw the Italian fleet out, but they wouldn't come out and fight. And then the next one was the invasion of Italy itself. Had a half share in an SM-84. That's an Italian Savio Mascia. Got the name of the aircraft, Savio 84.
Could you tell me what happened with that? What happened on that specific?
Well, it was an aeroplane comparable to, I suppose, a British Hudson Coast Command. It was capable of being a bomber, not a fighter. And, well, it was terrible. I mean, we shot it down. So I claim a half share. When a flight's going in, you're all shooting at it. Who does the coup de grace? Who is it? You don't know. So,
were you just on a patrol, or were you
doing an umbrella?
Umbrella.
What's called an umbrella, and it came too near the fleet, and so we saw it off. So no, it wasn't all that eventful. What was more eventful was his U-boats, and these putting limpet mines. When you're in the harbour at Merz El Kebir, and so there was quite a lot of activity with the albacores with torpedoes. There was a lot of other things like mid-air collisions, and I don't like talking so much about it, but it's you're interviewing me about war, and war isn't pleasant. And I know in the Mediterranean on one of these patrols I had my flight section all tightly in. We'd just taken off to do a two-hour umbrella off Malta, I think it was, between Malta and Gibraltar. And we'd taken off formidable, and we're relieving another flight from 888 Squadron who were finishing and they were coming to land. I have to demonstrate this with my hands. But we four, three in echelon and one in the box, were climbing whilst the other four were descending. We were climbing off the carrier to go out, and they were coming down to prepare to land. And the wingman and my wingman, Jack Hall, collided right within 10 feet of my shoulder. All I was aware of was a flash, and then I saw them both going down. And Peter Lang, he went straight in from the other, and Jack Hall, he got out of the aeroplane, but his parachute, we'll call it Roman candled, it didn't open out, and he hit the sea, decelerated a bit, but not fully, and he was alive. And he was taken into Gibraltar with a broken back, and he died in Gibraltar. And he was the only married member of the squadron. So there are times, you know, when it's unpleasant. But you soon, I don't know, the relief comes and you get mates and you're drinking gin and it doesn't dwell on you.
What were conditions like for you aboard Formidable? What kind of arrangements were there?
Oh, we shared cabins. Derek Stevens and my co-partner who composed the A25 song, and I. It says in the songbook, composed in cabin 75, the Arab quarter of HMS Fornal. Well, that was our cabin that we shared. And we just sang and were very rude.
What about messing arrangements?
Well, we dined in the officer's mess and we had the wardroom. I'll tell you something here. It's nothing to do with aeroplanes, but it's just a bit interesting. Have you ever heard of Noel Coward? Very famous impresario at the time. I've accompanied Noel Coward on the piano. How about that, eh? He sang and I played for him. But when I tell you the circumstances, I was playing the piano in the wardroom and Noel Coward was taking passage, ostensibly to go back to England from Gibraltar. In fact, we turned back and went back, so he had to fly home eventually. And as I was just playing, I don't know what I was playing, probably Getting Sentimental Over You, popular pops of the time, and he came into the wardroom and stood at the corner and started singing to me, and so I was accompanying him. When I got to the end, I got off. But it's something, I accompanied Noel Coward on the piano. There's one or two cartoons that have done me playing. I used to play mucky songs, basically. Mucky songs. But pops of the time, you know.
I take it the piano player is always a popular member of...
Oh, always, yeah. Yes, he's never short of beer. There's always a pint on the corner. But I was also, I think, probably one of the world's first DJs. I was very interested in jazz music, swinging jazz. Benny Goodman and Harry James and Count Basie, those names, long before your time. And I used to collect records when I was in England, but you could get them in Gibraltar as well. This is the swing era. And I used to get these records, and every Thursday night at 6:30, I had a half-hour programme throughout the ship's company, 1,500, 2,000 ship's company, with a microphone in my hand, playing records, but... So I was a DJ, but I talked over the record. I said, now, this next riff is John Kirby on bass. Notice, and I was talking about the music, but it was a DJ, no way. And it was to entertain the ship's company. So I reckon I was a DJ. Very light-hearted.
You mentioned a little bit about the Solano landings with the sea fires early on.
Yeah.
What was the role of the squadron during those landings? Did you
all the same. All the same. Supporting ground forces actually landing in case of enemy aircraft defending or enemy shipping defending, or over the fleet up at about 15 or 20,000 feet in case of any bombers or enemy aircraft of any sort. But as I say, the Italians are not fighters. And
did you have an increasing burden of responsibility, though, obviously, with your squadron, once the sea fires became less operational?
Oh, yeah, well, there wasn't one left. Rodney Carver was the CO of that squadron, and there wasn't one service. They were all on the bridge, what they called goofers, watching us when we came into land and applauding if we hit the barrier. They were out of the war then, so we had more umbrellas to do. But that's all.
What kind of duration would the umbrella operations be? Really?
2 hours, usually. 2 hours. Which was about the duration of the fuel tanks, allowing for spending a lot of full boost if you're in combat. You burn petrol off a lot if you're going through the gate, as they call it, at full bore. But 2 hours, usually.
And what was that like? Was it boring?
Ah, boring. Well, you climb up and you're doing square searches and you're just looking out what any enemy, you know, bogies anyway. A lot of false alarms. But boring. Mm.
What happened with, obviously, when Formula's time in the Mediterranean finished? Did you return to the UK?
Came to UK, yes. Mm.
What was your next?
Well, we're getting near the end of my career. When we came back to the UK, the squadron was disbanded. We all went separate ways. But Derek Stevenson, who I'd shared a cabin with, he went to be a deck landing officer, a batsman, in fact. Well, everybody did. They were given a restful role, instructing or something like that. But during my time aboard campships earlier on, I did. What time is it? During the time about campships, I'd invented a thing which was taken up later on. Basically, the aeroplanes with no flight deck, so that to harmonise the guns, remember, there could be three or four in each wing, so that the bullets converge. in a bullseye or in a spread at 220 yards, which is about right for a beam attack. How do you point them? You can't point them anywhere. What they do on land, you get the aeroplane, put an oil drum under the tail, so it's flight attitude, facing a hangar door. And on the hangar door, there'll be dots painted. All red dots means that that's going to be a spread pattern. Or blue dots, they'll converge in the bullseye, or whatever. But at sea, with a 70-foot, you couldn't do that. So I believe I said I was good at maths earlier on. With geometry, I got a huge tarpaulin and calculated at 70 feet what the convergence would be at 200 yards and painted a pattern on the huge tarpaulin so that we could harmonise the guns on board ship, even on board a flight deck of a carrier. It was easy. If the airplane had been in an accident or anything, the guns are out of alignment. Have you seen cars that blind you at night with it? It's because they've had a bump and they've never harmonised the gun or harmonised the headlamp. And so this idea was taken up. And the rest of the war, I hardly did any flying at all. I was at Stretton doing this new invention of being able to harmonise fighter aeroplanes, guns at sea. In short.
So you spent the remaining 2 years...
That was it. That, finished.
Well, really, just one last question then. How do you feel now about having served with the Fleet Air Arm during the Second World War?
Well, I'm still flying a bit. Where you are now, you're in the middle of the Pennines, and a pal of mine in 1971 was sick to fly like I had been, younger than me, and he came to me once, he said, will you get your licence back and let's join it by an aeroplane? And I said, gee, where's the nearest aeroplane airfield here? Well, there's Leeds Bradford, but it costs a fortune there. But there's Sherburn and Elmet, which are an hour and a quarter's drive away. And I said, all right, we'll share it an aeroplane, but on condition we don't keep it at Sherburn. By the time we get there, the weather's gone, and it's a wasted day, half day. If we can find an airstrip round here. And I found one on the top of this hill right here. It's 400 yards long and it's got a 4-foot wall at each end and it's grass, but it's an airstrip. And that was in 71. I went to British Road Services, who were selling their Bradford depot, and bought the roof trusses, which had a 50-foot span, for £150. And I went to Ondura Tyres in Keighley, were abandoning their factory, which had a 40-foot girder which spanned a hangar door. Wingspan's about 35 foot. And so we built our own airstrip, three of us, up on top of the hill here, and there's now six aeroplanes in it. And so I've let my licence lapse now, but I go up with Rodney occasionally, and he does the radio. It's different altogether now. Wherever you go, you've got to be in radio. I fly it, and he does the radio. Now then, so I'm still... But the Fleet Arm, I'm still connected with, because I run a thing called the Pennine Wing, which is just old fogies meeting once a year.